You are listening to Mystic Tea, a podcast dedicated to the mystical and magical. I'm your host, Pasha Hanina. I've invited some of my favorite friends from many paths and traditions to share their wit and wisdom, unique gifts, and crafty conjurings. So take off your cloak, set a spell, and join us for a cuppa, Mystic Tea. Welcome back to Mystic Tea. I'm Pasha Hanina, and I'm very excited to be in the tea house today with an inspiration and a very good friend of mine, Debbie Delisle. And Debbie's here as part of our community, a way for us to look into the very incredible, magical community that we have here and look at what people are doing and how they're inspiring the world with their magic. Debbie is the founder of the Madison County Community Learning Centers. She's the executive director of Woodson Branch Nature School. Some of you have heard me talk about Woodson Branch in the past. And her most important job is that she's a mother to three boys. She has three brothers, and she's a sister. But she's a friend to all children. Debbie is an amazing writer. She loves to read, sing, roller skate. She's a ukulele player. When I play ukulele, people pray that I stop. So I guess that's snuck in. She loves fun and healthy foods, which is represented in her farm and nature school. And I'll let her talk a little bit more about that. But what's really amazing about Debbie is that she's a grassroots innovator with a deep love for small town community living. She's designed several businesses, group activities, and celebration projects over the years to help meet the needs of its people. For some people who don't know, we live in a very small rural community. Our town has 600 people, and our whole county only has 6,000 people. And Debbie has been an incredible asset to this community in so many ways. But her greatest joy has been working with children in and all around nature for the past 30 years. Debbie says, "I wholeheartedly believe that we create our own past, present, and future." So without further ado, welcome to the Tea House, Debbie.
Thank you. I am super excited to be here. Now, we've talked about this for a while, but I've always wanted to be on a podcast. This is my first time, so I am really honored to be on Mystic Tea, and I'm just really, really excited to talk about my favorite subject in the world, the magic of childhood.
Yes, so we're going to talk today about magical children. And there's no better person to have this conversation with, in my humble opinion. But before we dive in, Debbie, what you drinking?
Okay, I'm actually double-fisted today. I have my cup of broth. I make stock, and I'm nursing a gut belly deal. So I've been drinking, starting my days with broth that I made with some coconut milk added in. And then in the other fist is my badass Debbie tea is what it's called.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Nice. Also addressing my recent, stomach issues. I got a nice herbal blend from my herbalist, and I'm going to read it off so that you can know, but it's got Damania, holy basil, wood batoni, passion flower, and marshmallow leaf.
Ooh.
I know. It actually tastes really good, and it's very soothing, and it's supposed to be really good for the gut and for sleep, like helping me like not stay asleep all day, but like sleep all night. So I'm supposed to drink it all through the day, and she named it Badass Debbie Tea, and I thought that was really, really cool.
Well, that is perfect because it's refueling, recharging, and also very soothing, which I think suits you very well.
Thank you. What are you drinking, Pasha?
Yes. Well, speaking of magical children, this Proud Mama mug holds a cup of Artisan's finest coffee. I'm still working on my coffee this morning. I usually shift to tea later in the afternoon, but I need that coffee boost. And I think coffee is a high vibration food. My body may not agree with me, but sometimes the mind wins.
Sure. I can't deny that caffeine makes me vibrate. So,
well, and, you know, when I say proud mom, I'm like, this is one of the two. My daughters, as you know, were just accepted into university. And we went over spring break. We went to Duke and Chapel Hill to check out their new digs. And so this is one of those mugs to represent school spirit here. This is the Chapel Hill mug, but don't worry, Sophia, I'll be drinking Duke tomorrow.
I love it. You gotta spread the love. Oh, that's awesome.
So today we're gonna talk about magical children, which is my favorite subject. I'm so inspired by the young ones in the world right now. I'm just constantly blown away, and it's inspired so much of what I do in the world. And it's also really transformed, I would imagine, your life purpose. Tell us how you got involved with Woodson Branch, and tell us a little bit about the program at Woodson Branch. What's happening there?
Wow, that is that's a really big question, because like the story of how it all happened is a magical story in itself, and then to what it is, you know, where it started and then what it is doing today, two real different things, but all at the same heart, you know, base was like kids grow better and they learn better when they're outside and when they're in nature. You know, and so, you know, that's what's happening today is, we have got all these incredible, learning spaces, you know, in and out of doors, but like primarily out of doors. And so that's what's happening. There's all this, you know, connected up opportunities with kids to be able to be in nature, to learn their calculations and their communications. You know, that's the way I break it down, but that's what it's all about. So, which direction do you want to take it in?
Well, that's just it. So Woodson Branch is a K-8. Are we still doing K? K-8. Private community school in this rural neighborhood that I was talking about.
Yeah. Right?
So with any rural community, first of all, there's only so many kids to go around, right? So what made you think to yourself, well, I think that we need a new school?
Oh, well, that one's easy. And that's because not every child is built the same. Everybody's got different needs, you know, and people need to be able to have some options for their kiddos. There's, you know, we got the traditional way that we most of us grew up with, and that is related to being indoors all day long, except for a small bit of time to get outside and run around for maybe 30, but most of the time's not even that many minutes. and so, it was very clear to me when I was diving into, my research and my wishes and wants as a young mother. What do I do with these boys, you know, and how do I do the best for them? And the things I was uncovering, specifically in, No Child, The Last Child Lost in the Woods. That one is the one that really grabbed my heart. It's based around the nature deficit disorder and the concept that so many of our world's problems are related back to kids being pulled inside all day long. And then not only all day long in school, then all evening long on online and on video games and things like that. So leaving really no very much room at all for kids to be growing outside like they used to. The whole thing really just went into the idea of like, we need to hop in on this optimal time of their learning and figure out a way to do it outside, you know, just just get out, get out from the doors. Yeah. And so, that's the, you know, that is, I don't even remember what the question was now, but that was the main thing, you know, for how it got to be where we needed to have some options, and we needed to have more than just one possibility. And then, like you say, in a small town, you got limited resources. So there was really only just the one option for our children. So yeah, coming together with the other young parents around here too. And everybody's like, what should we do? What are we going to do about this? And that's where the idea of just talking and figuring out what kind of resources we had, what could we make, what could we build? And, you know, and then the idea of this community learning center came about that could be supportive of the things that we don't have here, meaning like preschool and after school and summer camp, you know, like those were the things that we knew that we could do right away. We knew we couldn't just start up a school, you know, and compete in there with the public school at that time. But we wanted to just kind of sandwich in and enhance what was already here. And for those first 10 years, we just worked really beautifully hand in hand with what we had in the public school. And we set up shop right next door to them. So we prepped those little preschoolers and then we took care of their big kids after school. And we, then we did summer camp, and we let kids that would never have been able to afford to go to summer camp, you know, be able to go just up the street for super affordable and have this, you know, beautiful experience being summer camp kids. And, you know, and so that was the beginning, is like just getting some options, getting our feet wet in there and saying, what can we do to have some other alternatives to just sitting in a desk all day long?
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great introduction. And I can really relate to what it's like to have your kids grow up in a concrete jungle, because we relocated here. They were going to school in Hollywood. So, you know, they left and their playground looked more like a prison yard. And in fact, even at home, they weren't allowed to ride their bike up and down the street. You know, they had to have supervision because we lived in a really rough neighborhood. It was, you know, it's Los Angeles, so I don't know, maybe it's all a rough neighborhood, but they, you know, the first time that they were able to ride their bike alone was after we moved here. And I think they were 12 years old, you know, and they're like, wow, you know, we can actually, you know, be outside. And when we left Los Angeles, my biggest hope was wherever we found ourselves, because we didn't really know where we were going, really, was that they would leave childhood knowing authentically who they were. And the only way that they were going to do that is if they could experience the connectivity with what's around them. You know, I always raised them to know that anything is possible. But having that belief and then having that experience as your body's maturing and changing and you're learning how you're going to think, not just how you're going to perform a job or a function or get skills, but how you're going to actually function in the world as a whole person, is something that I think is lacking in childhood for many people, not only in the school system and the way that school is taught out of necessity oftentimes. And I'm not a basher of public school, But I understand, because I taught in public school as well. I understand those limitations. You've got 35 kids and you've got an hour to teach a subject. You're going to try to pound as much information into them. Whereas, you know, my approach was always a little bit different. And that's why I was drawn to Woods and Branch when we came out here, was, no, we're actually not going to pound it into you. We're going to throw you outside in the snow and you're going to figure it out yourself, but you're going to do it in a way that there's space for you to be held in that, so that you can, you can have pride in what you create. You can have pride in what you learn. And I think that's the foundation of a magical childhood, is simply not taking the magic away from them, but letting them own it.
It just, when you're laying it out that way, it makes me just, you know, want to say about that piece of like celebration for what it is that you create and what you put out there. And that's what I was finding a lot with those kiddos who just can't sit still, you know, and they've been our main indicator of why we need to, you know, wake up people and get outside and get moving. But they were demanding that we please do that. But the thing is that they were getting no cred for the amazing things that they were able to create and do and produce if they didn't have the focus to sit down and check little boxes, you know, to show right. what they know. They could build things. And so that's what one of the things I just really do love about Woodson too, is our, you know, dedication to like seeing kids and really looking at what they can make and do and produce, and then celebrating that so that they just know it was worth it. It mattered, and they matter, and it is valuable, and we need you in this world. And like, where can you plug in? You know, not sit still, be quiet, and don't tell us your amazingness. You know, don't show us your amazingness. In fact, you're going to be in a bad grade for that, in a bad class for that. What are we doing with that? That's not going to get anybody anywhere, you know, and that's, you know, a whole line of magical kids that I've encountered over the years that, you know, that when we just gave them a little bit of like, oh my God, look at that amazing thing you just said, did, drew, built, and then their eyes light up, and then they start telling other people about it, and other people join in, and then things lift, you know, they lift up, and that, to me, that's magic. That's the magic of it. So
yeah, I don't think that a magical childhood is something that you give your children. Mm-mm. I think it's something that you honor.
Yeah, you notice it.
I remember the girls, I guess they came to Woodson Branch officially. They were in the fifth/sixth grade because, you know, they sort of did what they did. But there was a student there that had started that same year. And this was, in many ways, this child had the makings of a kid that would be socially isolated in a traditional public school system. And this child was withdrawn. And I remember the kids all sort of making a circle, inviting him to come sit with them, and he would not. He was incredibly artistic, so he spent a lot of his time really isolating and drawing. And I watched as the young ones that you were cultivating their experience there, but I watched them always gently making space for him. And that year I didn't see much progress, but I came back a couple years later as a teacher, and he was one of my students now. Mm-hmm. And completely different child. This child had every friend, was the loudest, most creative, really putting himself out there, really showing his imagination. For a teacher, it wasn't always a pleasant experience, I'll be honest with you, because he didn't always want to do the work, wanted to do it his way. But I was patient, and I was, you know, modeling what I was shown through what your expectations were, was to be patient with this child and hold that space. And at one point, he loves dragons, right? So, you know, that's you're talking my language now. But oh, yeah. He was only doing like anything that the assignment was. It was dragons, 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 dragons. And was trying to exert a little bit of authority over me because I was kind of new in the classroom, and he was pushing every button. I looked him in the eye and I said, "Look, I know that you're a dragon, but I am a dragon master.
Yes.
If you want to go toe-to-toe with me, we can do that, but I will win. I know the magic." And it was really funny, and it was great, and amazing things came out of that child. And I just amazed. But later on, I look at again, and I see him then transitioning into high school and having a girlfriend and having friends and really emerging from middle school, the most torturous time in most children's life, emerging, like, knowing who he was and being proud of it and bringing it out into the world. And that's the magic right there. Like, nobody tried to steal it from him. And I really don't, like I said, I worked in a couple of different middle schools in public school system. And that wasn't what was offered to those students. It was you're in trouble, or, you have to do it this way. And they left angry. They didn't leave joyful, and they didn't leave, ready to take on the world and bring their magic forward.
Right.
I always say, I knew that Woodson Branch was an amazing place because my kids would have made it anywhere. You could put them in a shoebox and they'll be like, what?
That's true.
when you see a child, and I work with at-risk youth, so I recognize, usually on the other end where it could have been different. And when you see a child that whose magic was treasured and preserved, that's it right there. Yeah. That's success. You made it, Deb. You made it. That's it. Like, I think that there are children that just aren't going to make it in that traditional system. There's no room for them there. And when you can preserve that for them, and then they're responsible for it, they're responsible for what they do after that. But, that's a true treasure.
It's a true treasure, and I always say, these kiddos that, and I know who you're talking about, and that person has I have a deep love and respect and joy in my heart for what happened with that student. And we have a lot of that can happen. That happens for our kiddos that just would not have made it anywhere else, and it is very, very joyful and it feels amazing, and it's confirmation that we're doing the right thing. But I've also, have had that pleasure of watching kids like your kids that come in, like you said, could have thrived anywhere. And, they would have brought magic and joy to a dark place, but that's their job for the rest of the life, like in their childhood. I love that they got to come to a spot and they got to shine and use their gifts wherever they started from, and then elevate it just a little bit more, but they had all that space. And there's been so many magical moments with your kids and kids like your kiddos that came in too and just added to it. Like, they were the ones lifting up other students too, besides our teachers. But like, when they came in and they brought it to our theater productions and our class discussions and our partners games and things like that, they were on the other ends of those things, assuring these kids, besides just teachers going, "You got this, you're a good kid." The children do it for each other. They are magical to each other. And they, and then they left their mark, your kids influenced and left behind a legacy beyond their little legacy projects. they left, they touched hearts, and they grew, they had seeds, they planted all these little seeds in people, and we celebrate that, because to me, the adults ruin everything whenever given a chance, but they not on purpose, we don't do that. But like, the kids are the ones that really have the ability to hold magic space and not doubt it. And then, and then what we got to do as adults, we got to learn from them, and we learn how to we got to keep that space going, and we got to quit falling prey to the fears that they're not going to achieve anything. Cause it's like the opposite. They will achieve everything and beyond, so far beyond, if we just don't mess with it, you know, be aware and cognizant. We've got to be there to like notice their great things and, you know, help build those things up. There's a lot of technique that goes into holding a space like that as an adult. So you can't just go in nilly willy, but I'm just saying, I think that I wouldn't be able to do half the stuff I've done with my magical classrooms without the energy, raising that energy and holding that for all those kids who can get there, you know, real easily.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it reminds me, like, you know, what you said is it takes magical children to teach magical adults, to grow magical adults. Because yes. Still learning, you know, because when, for me at least, I don't know, I only have my own experience, but there was no space. I can only remember one time when any adult slash teacher really stood up for me. And that was when I was in the fifth grade. This poor kid, Tony, came to drink from the water fountain, and my horse was drinking there, and I pushed him away, and I said, "You can't drink right now. My horse is drinking." Right? Of course, it was an invisible horse, and assumed everybody should know this, and he was really upset about it, and he ran to the teacher, and he said, "Pasha won't let me drink because her horse is drinking," and she said, "Well, wait till the horse is done," and just have a little patience here. The horse will be done soon. It's not going to drink all day.
Yeah, because you can't see it. Yeah.
He was just shocked. And I just, you know, there was a little moment of victory for me. But I also think about, like, we're learning from them that it is okay to be magical. And it is okay to be young.
Yeah.
Right. But holding that space requires a lot of extra work. It's easy to put a device in front of a kid, and it's hard to lay on the floor and count beans. You know, I mean, it really is, because you're exhausted and you're tired, and you know, you said that one of your influences was a book called The Power of Socratic Classroom by Charles Fisher. Yeah. And, you know, and I think, you know, that we have to make space for children in the discussion if we expect them to change the world. And, you know, I don't have big expectations for my kids. I think global domination is really a small requirement for any child. But if you're going to do that, if you're going to expect them to really effect great change, you got to give them a voice. And we oftentimes, as children, at least when I was growing up, I had to really, really fight for that voice. And as an adult, I had to listen to that voice when, you know, sometimes I was kind of tired and I just wanted a result. So in the classroom, but even, you know, in society and in our families, it's not easy. It's, you know, it or my teacher would say, it's not that easy, but it is that simple.
Yeah.
I remember one time, kind of early on when I was doing this work, I was approached by a mother who asked me to come do a house clearing, that they had some energy at the house, and she asked me to do this. And this kid, her son, I think it was in the first grade, and was really, really struggling with just behavioral issues, and was kind of getting in trouble at school. And so I came over, and I get into the house. I'm walking through the house, and I get to his bedroom, and I say, "Does he sleep well?" And she says, "No, he doesn't sleep well. He's really scared at night because he says there's a witch under the bed." And I said, "Oh, well, let's look under the bed." So I look under the bed, and then I, you know, kind of start moving some stuff around. She says, "Well?" And I said, "Yeah, there's a witch under the bed. Not really a witch, but it's a dark spirit, a female spirit. And she appears like a witch. She had that really scary, she had a really scary energy. It was terrifying, actually. If I was a child and I was seeing that, I would be really scared to go to sleep too. And she said, "Oh, I didn't really believe him. I thought it was just the imagination." I said, "Well, we'll get rid of her and we'll see how he does." And so we moved her on, transitioned her out, and he started sleeping again. you know, and it was just like those things. And she said, I didn't believe him. I said, but you did. You actually did believe him because you brought me here. Right. If you really didn't believe him, you would have never brought me here. You know, sure. You wouldn't have asked me to come into your home. So you did believe him. It just didn't fit.
And that inkling is really, really important because adults, you know, we weren't supported a lot of times in our, you know, growing ups or whatever. But when you got to learn to just follow those inklings, those little whispers, the things that make you go, oh, I should probably help here. Maybe I ought to try another angle or anything like that. And it's like, that is the clue. That's like, go ahead, adults, do that, because the kids will take it from there if you just give them a space, you know. And yeah, the part about them having a voice is, I just can't believe we've missed it for so long, you know, as a people, as a group. Yeah. You know, and, the thing is that, you know, bringing that back to light and having space for kiddos to be able to, do their magic and speak to one another, talk to one another, problem solve and puzzle, and for adults to recognize it, the value in that, you know, the benefits are just going to be exponential. You can't even calculate that. But like the part that comes in between that about how to actually do that, it's just that the adults have the time that's harder for them. So like when you mentioned the Socratic seminar piece, that one is really neat because it's like a how-to book on what's an adult supposed to do. You know, right. when the kids get in a circle, you know, because number one is you step out, you're not in charge anymore. You know, you're not leading it anymore. You're kind of, you're holding the space and you're very, very important, but you are not the center of that anymore. You're helping them as a group find the center. And so that's the neat part about the techniques in there. And, you know, simple concept, not super complicated, but the hardest piece is just tearing yourself, the adult, out of the middle of the room, the middle of the attention.
Thinking about, remember those toys we used to have as kids I'm sure they still have them, but where you put a shape inside another shape and you're trying to match the star goes into the star and the circle goes into circle. And, you know, we've been trying to force, we've been trying to make sure that everything matched, but rather than trying to force a circle into a star, what our kids are showing us is just change the shape. Yeah. Like you can actually just change the shape. Or if you make that space bigger and it's not limited to a star, you can actually fit a lot of things in there that you didn't know. Right. Mm. So when there's no boundary, you can fill it with the impossible. And I think that's a beautiful core for our magical children.
That makes me think of the, you know, beauty of the sacred geometry concepts, because like there is no longer 2D, like just get off the 2D plane, turn it, you know, you turn it just an angle, a slight angle, and boom, there are the, you know, the answers are huge and like they'll blow your mind, but you just boom. And now, you know, you see it in this entirely different way. It's not even a star at all shape. This thing is got so many other points. It's a star. It's a big fat circle. Everything fits in a circle.
And it's constantly expanding. Mm-hmm. I always think of this really funny. So at my old house, when we were in Los Angeles, we had this big kitchen, and the kitchen, it was an old house. It was built in 1910, and the kitchen burned down in like 1960, and they rebuilt it, but they didn't put fancy cupboards in it. They just did plywood. So when we moved in, we painted them, we painted the cabinets, but they were still kind of like crummy cabinets, but we put paint markers and chalk markers. So we decorated, the whole kitchen was just decorated with, if we had an inspiration or we had a thought, we would just write it. Anybody could pick up a pen and write it. And I didn't really punish my kids. I don't know, maybe that explains a lot, but they never really had an actual punishment, but I had Mom Wart School of Magic, and they each had picked their house, you know, that they named, And I would put a point. So if something was like a Yahoo, I'd give them a point. And if it wasn't, it took the point away. And it was just a point. It was a point on the wall or a point away from the wall or 5 points or minus five or whatever. And I think, gosh, maybe they were eight. And one of my daughters goes, Mom, what are the points for? What are the points for? And I was like, oh, draft bust. Because, you know, there was never really a reward and there was never really a punishment. It was just the point in and of itself. That wasn't the story I was going to tell, though. I don't know why it kind of came in, but it was kind of funny because it's like it worked until it didn't work, right? And then I had
And humans love numbers. Like, we'd love to see things, whether they make sense to us or not. Like,
That's right. But the thing that I was thinking about was, I think that it was a preschool gathering, was in the kitchen. Everyone used to hang out in it was a great kitchen. And we were all sitting around the table and the kids were playing and we're having our hummus and carrots and doing all of that. And it was just like, you know, a table. There was probably six or eight of us moms. And all of a sudden, the way that the craftsman was, like, there was a door into the kitchen and a door out of the kitchen. So in craftsman architecture, everything just flows really naturally. So there was like a doorway in and a doorway out. So all of a sudden, we felt this whoosh. And all the moms' heads go from the direction of one to the direction of the other, just like kind of all simultaneously. We don't really know why. We just kind of like do it. And we have in that moment of like, did we all just do that? Like, did we all just feel something? We're still in that millisecond. And one of my daughters comes running and she's in her fairy costume, hair's flying all over the place. She's laughing maniacally. And she runs in that first door, stops like just outside the second door, turns to us and goes, I just chased the dragon. And we go, yeah, he went that way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't know that, like, what we were doing, but we felt it, we experienced it, and we didn't shut it down.
Yeah.
We didn't go, oh, go have fun or play. Like, we acknowledge, and it's like that tiny little acknowledgement. She wasn't asking permission, first of all. Okay, she wasn't asking permission. But we acknowledged that we also had experienced something instead of trying to find another place, you know, in that star hole to be like, oh, it was probably just the wind or whatever. All of us go, you just keep on going, you know, like, and I think it's those tiny little moments of confirmation, because they're not asking permission, but when they get acknowledgement, it creates a strength and a power that, I don't know, I don't even have a word for it. Yeah. You can't take that away from them, you know, you can't take it away from them.
No. And especially once you start bumping them up a little bit for it and making that space, they'll never give it back, you know, won't. And I hope that they keep it for forever because, you know, they need all the power and support they can get to, take care of this world, you know, moving forward and help these adults, their older people, you know, to change their thinking on stuff.
Everybody has to go through, you know, every human has to go through these times where there's hard times and there's challenges and they're questioning everything they've ever known and everything that they stand for, and they're shedding one skin and they're becoming, I mean, nobody's exempt from that.
Right.
But if you don't have to spend all that energy trying to declare the value of your own experience, think about how much ahead of the game you are when you go through those dark challenges. Because even when those times when you can't find them, and I think especially very highly sensitive children, they get hit hard. You know, when they sink, they sink. When they soar. Like, it's just, but those sinks are hard. And if somewhere in them is this little seed, right? You talked about the seed, and they know it's there. They just have that much more internal support to help them realize that they have value in this world, this physical world, They don't have to escape to the magical world. They can bring the magical world here to them, and they can exist here. You talk also about another one of your influences was a book by Paula Denton called The Power of Our Words. And that's a big thing for me and for our family unit, is you be mindful what you say, but also be mindful what you think, that your words are powerful and your words are magic. And in this book, it talks about like how teacher language can affect children in that way. But I think that we always have a thing where we say, it is so. So like if we've accidentally thrown something out there in anger or like just a thoughtless thing, you get one go. But if you say it three times, you've made it. You've made it so. I think it's really cool because kids can realize that they can create anything that they want if they use language in a beneficial way.
Oh, yeah. There's so much power to specifically the written word. That one I think is even more powerful than your incantations or whatever, because you can say things and put it out there and then that kind of, you know, it's out to the wind and out to whatever, however it's received and everything. But when you do slap some words down on paper or on the wall or, you know, wherever you're going to, you know, put your words, you know, obviously nothing is always ever permanent. You can always paint over things, but it's just more strong and solid in it. And it has ridiculous powers out there for like, making things happen. Yes.
Speaking of this is bringing up another personal experience. So we were on the way to the airport, but we were doing a really, really big Halloween event at the White House. And we had all of the costumes right in our car. So the equipment had been shipped, but we had several bags of costumes. So it was me and the kids, and my husband was already gone. We're getting on the freeway, and it's still Los Angeles, so there's traffic, but this is a ridiculous amount of traffic. We'd left in plenty of time and the freeway was completely locked down. And you know, when you have bags, you have to get there a certain amount of time, you know, ahead of time. And the kids were still in booster seats. So we had like all this stuff. So we're getting on the freeway and time's ticking and we are no longer in that window where we're going to be able to check our bags. And we pull off and we have to take side streets. And my husband calls and he's trying to be cheerful. He's like, so how's it going? And we're like, yeah, we've been diverted. We can't get there. And he's like, you're never going to make it. And the kids from the back seat start screaming, we're going to make it. It is so. Hang up the phone. So I hung up on it. And they said, nobody puts words on us. We are going to make it, right? Yeah. So we find our parking. We somehow get there. We're like 15 minutes to gate close. We get pulled over at TSA. They start pulling things out. And the girls, they're little. They're like, we're fine. We run through LAX with our stuff. I don't even know. We get there, they close the gate. And we pull up and we go, oh. And you will know if you fly at all, this does not happen. When those gates and those doors are closed, the doors are closed. It cannot open. It's TSA regulation. And I will also say that even though we were doing a job at the White House did not book our ticket. So there's no, we booked our own ticket, right? They go, Solomon. And I go, yeah, come on in, open the gate, open the doors. We walk in. The girls are like, yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
we did it. They sit down. They got a ginger ale. They weren't allowed.
Yeah, they did.
They sat there with their ginger ale. They're like, we did this, you know? And sometimes just as adults, you sit back and you like, you drive, kids, because you know what? You're so much stronger than me. There's nothing in your way. We got this. But that is the power of words. But I also told them, I said, you can't have all the benefits of a magical life and none of the responsibility. So when you talk about how they show up for others, that's part of that responsibility, is that they know that things are special. They didn't have to learn that. They just already knew it. So they need, so part of their job is to help cultivate that in the people that they come in contact with. And, you know, it doesn't matter if they believe in magic. It doesn't matter if they think it, right? They don't, it can be whatever they call it. It's just how they show up and how they use the power of their influence.
Sure. And the, you know, like you say, you can't avoid like the wind and the variables that try to knock you down in your life. So doubt does ensue, you know, and you can get to that point where you're, you know, like, is this even real? Does this even work? You know, and that piece, that doubt can be so debilitating in a world where it's not really supported. It's just looked at it as coincidence, you know, and that's the thing, is like the more evidences that you have, the more you celebrate and the more you acknowledge the times like, yeah, this is how magic works and this works. It becomes the majority of the time as opposed to the minority, you know, and it's not this big, you know, surprise every time something happens. They're like, of course it happens, you know, and those are the things that get you through your doubtful moments, you know, because they're going to happen, you know, but you can be like, keep a good list of your evidences if you need to, you know, like a magic documentation book is a, sure. You know, in a collection of the stories of what happens, you know, because they help you in the time when you're just feeling doubtful, like a human does.
You know? One of the greatest gifts that my kids have given me, and I think is a good lesson for all, is that it's never late, too late to have a magical childhood. I'm having a childhood right now.
Oh, I know. And like old people can do it really good too, because they don't necessarily have the same responsibilities of taking care of little people anymore. But like old people can get back to it, you know, and they don't have to go to work anymore. And they're just looking for stuff to do. Man, get back in the magic land and then hang out with kids, you know?
Yeah. but even, you know, people who still have to clock in for 8 to 10 hours a day, even people who still have to commute and raise their families and pay their bills, they can find the magic of childhood if they open themselves up to it. But one of the things that was very difficult for me to learn, and what my spirit team has been really, really, really pushing me out of my comfort zone with, is just simply play. Because I'm a hard worker. I work really, really hard. And when I work, I'm really focused and I don't like to be interrupted. But just play. Have fun, by golly.
Aren't you a triple Capricorn or something?
Oh, goodness gracious, no. I have 7 aspects in Scorpio. I'm walking in density. Yeah. Capricorn. No, I'm Scorpio.
That's right. Okay. All right. I was like, this hard work and stuff, I've seen it, you know, I know what you're talking about. Now I've also seen your play side in theater. Like that's where I've seen you be super playful, and your writing. Good God. Yeah. There's that too. But like theater, if we didn't have that, the poor adults would never be able to, they have such a hard time getting back into it. But theater is that opening, you know, it's that little avenue in that's acceptable. Just get in there and be and do something different, be somebody else and find, you know, an avenue there. Theater and nature, of course, but theater. Mm.
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun, which of course I only did that because there were, you know, the kids wanted theater. And I'm like, right. Oh, well, we can do that. You know, that's no problem. That's easy. No problemo. But I'm thinking of a time when, you know, a long time ago, I was so stiff in my body, and I still am. Like, I'm not a dancer. I'm not an acrobat. I don't have that kind of natural fluidity in my body. And I was skating roller derby at the time, which I'm also pretty clumsy, so that was funny. But I have a mean streak, so it gave me a chance to put some of that Scorpio energy. But one of the roller derby teachers was also teaching hula hoop. So I thought, I don't know how to hula hoop. I'm going to go play. I'm going to do some hula hoop. I could not hula hoop. Like, I couldn't get, like, my body was like, no, I'm not going to do it. You know, and there, and I just couldn't, like, have the play from it. Like, just, I was trying to figure out the logic of it and the geometry and, you know, physics and all of that. But I just, like, the play part of it, that connection, I couldn't tap into. And what I did was I just put on a blindfold. And suddenly I wasn't in a class anymore. It was just me and the rhythm of whatever was happening. And I was able to hula hoop. And I think that sometimes when we just, like, and I can still hula hoop. Not great, but I can do it, you know.
Okay.
And I kind of gave myself that freedom to not worry about, am I being judged? Do I look stupid?
Do you know what's cool about that, Pasha, is a hula hoop is a circle, you know?
Yeah.
It is a circle, and it is the no beginning, no end thing. And when you step inside of that thing, you have stepped inside of a magic space. Oh, yeah. Right there. Yes, yes.
I love that perspective.
Do you like music?
Okay, truthfully,
yeah,
I like silence.
That's cool. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. That's not funny.
It's true, though. See, this is, I really, really, really like, and I'm sure that there has to be at least part of you laughing because you know that that's something that I never, ever, 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 ever get. And like, music is huge in our family. Like, my husband's a musician. The kids are musicians. They never stop singing. There's always like that, like, so I am comforted sometimes, sometimes not. I'm comforted by music, but when I listen to music, usually I am listening to the words. So the lyric, and I'm a writer, right? So I feel like there's an incredible power in music. And I get it, but when I really, really connect to a song, I'm connecting to the lyrics. I'm connecting to the poetry. I'm connecting to that side of it. And I'm making myself, over the past few years, I've been making myself dance. So I've been putting on the headphones, no words, right? I like to grow by pushing myself out of my comfort zone. What do I not like about this? Because that's where my lesson is. And I think that lesson is that music breaks down those barriers. Right? Music breaks down that wall, and you just become the rhythm. Yeah. You become the sound. You become that frequency. And I have always held myself in a very rigid and structured box, which is interesting when you look at my life and the way that I live my life, you wouldn't think that, but that's because I force myself out of it. That I was told, do something one day, do one thing every day that terrifies you. And honestly, sometimes that's that. Sometimes it's putting on the headphones so I don't get overwhelmed by, you know, too much, and dancing.
Yeah.
And letting the music come in, because it breaks me out of that rigid box where I feel that I understand what the rules are.
Did you have traditional schooling? Like, you went to public school and...
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I did. And I spent the better part of it out in the hallway with sitting alone with my desk.
Yeah. So when you think about that, you know, like, you're conditioned to be a stationary when you learn stuff or whatever. And you clearly busted through all of that, and regardless, you were very, very successful with the way you connected everything. But what's interesting is that, like, we designed that into the world at Woodson Branch. It's all movement, you know, like you're sitting for a very, very small amount of time because you're up and doing and you're building and you're making and you're squeezing and you're, you know, pushing and, you know, and things like that and walking, you know, and then changing spaces and going from one room to another, one learning space, to another, one tree to another, you know, out in the woods. And it just reminded me that where that concept came from about moving kids all over the place during our learning time. I took NIA classes with Lisa Mandel many years ago. We started a long, long time ago, and it is such a beautiful form of, it's like three-part kind of a deal. It's like the mixture of yoga, martial arts, and jazz. And yeah. And it's just a beautiful modality because those are the three main things. And it's 1 hour long, but it's just got these different pieces of music that aren't typical or whatever. They're really cool soundtrack to it. And it's just these series of movements that you do at three different kinds of levels, depending on your, you know, energy or whatever. But they lead you through it. You follow along. It's beautiful. And it's incredible. It like really opened my mind. That's why I'm so movie all the time. you know, and it's just, it's in my body that way. But I credit the entire ability for this thing to actually fly off the ground was because of my experience with Nia and Lisa Mandel in particular, who is just another incredible community member who has done beautiful things to awaken the spirit of movement and people in this community. She has recently stepped out of being a Nia teacher and is doing her own, and she calls it Move Class. Yeah. And it's up there at Magic Town Studios in Marshall. And it's a once a week or twice a week thing. And I can't go every time, but when I do, oh man, it's where the magic is. And it's just such a cool practice. So yeah, just
really. Maybe I'll bring my blindfold and come. Mm-hmm.
There you go. I will. I would love to accompany right you sometime.
By us. But I think I love that idea. And I recognize my limitations when it comes to the things that make me uncomfortable. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with conditioning and as a childhood. And that's why I guess it is alternative education. That's not the word I want to use. Enriching education that really honors the whole child. Mm-hmm. And that means the physical body, not just the mental body. Because when you're doing that, and the spiritual body, when you're talking about moving from trees or sitting with the creek or even cultivating the land in a harmonious way, that's a spiritual body. You know, mm-hmm. they're not making prayer. Maybe they are. I don't know. It's up to them. But that's still a prayerful act. You're still honoring the land is a spiritual act. Walking in harmony with nature is a spiritual act. So you're bringing in the emotional, the social emotional, which has found its way into classrooms. Mm-hmm. But you're also giving space for all of these other characteristics, and movement is a big part of that because it breaks up the stagnant energies. It moves it through. And I'm kind of a brooder. So, you know, I it's been a challenge, but a worthwhile challenge for me to find ways to break up that stagnant energy within myself, you know, outside of here, my brain and my mind, and move it into the physical. It's a constant challenge for me. I think that would be a good class for me, but I might have to bring my blindfold.
Hey, anything's welcome there. You know, if you can imagine, I've seen it all in that movement space. So you would be welcome to bring whatever you needed. Yeah, but it's just cool. Yeah. And it's highly recommend.
I think whatever. And I know that you recently took up rollerblading and, you know, anything that you can do to bring joy into joy, like actual joy. Yes. Into your existence, make space for magical things to come in with it.
I think that that's it too. Like, you know, how to cultivate joy. Some people know exactly what makes them happy and what really makes their heart pump. And that's a good clue. Keep doing more of that, you know. But if you're just so unsure and you just don't know, I have just found that it is a very natural avenue towards joy is just moving yourself somewhere, anywhere. You know, you can move in your mind and you can imagine things and you know the power of that, but even just get up and walk into another room, you know, or open the door and step outside. You have just opened yourself to a whole new portal of something else. And if you believe that and you can, you know, look at it that way, it's not so hard, you know, it's just a breath away to hop on a magic line if you are feeling stuck. You know, you just first have to recognize you're stuck, because sometimes people don't even realize it. They're all the way down the road and they're stiff as a board and, you know, they don't know what's wrong. And, you know, yeah. And but once you have the knowledge, you're like, I'm too stiff. I need, you know, I'm not in a magic space right now, you know, then it's, you know, a matter of, okay, shake it off, open up, lighten up, and you can find yourself easier way to get there.
For sure. Mm. Well, I know that, you know, our life has been greatly affected by the work that you're doing. And I also know that it's not easy work. You know, you showing up every day and doing that, trying to stay and being the magic, right? Holding that space, not only for yourself, but for everything that's around you, including the land and including, you know, the community. It all sort of grows out from you. So I just want to, you know, chin chin, you know, for an yes. immense gratitude to you for dreaming. You know, it's easy to dream. We all daydream, but it's not easy to do and to be a dreamer and a doer and take all the hits and all the ups and downs and all the times you want to quit and all the times that it doesn't feel like it's working. Yeah. They all sort of disappear in that one magic moment, you know, maybe multiple magic moments, but you to preserve that beauty in our children is truly a gift that you're offering to this community. And I think even beyond, because they're all going to go out and do what they're going to do and take that with them. And it's powerful. It's powerful work.
It is. Like, I am grateful. I'm not trying to do something really awesome and amazing in a different field. Because, you know, thank goodness the kids are right there, you know, like when I get in my own mode of like, oh my God, the numbers and oh my God, the problems and the bureaucracy and the state and the county, you know, and all this stuff. When I get into that, I can turn my head and look right next to me, right there is not only awesome nature, you know, I got that, but I got kids doing nature, and that's just, the energy's coming off of them. That's, you know, you can't deny it. And then I can remember very quickly and easily what we're doing this for. And then also get a little extra bonus charge out of it. So I feel a little bad sometimes that I can, you know, get such pleasure and joy, not really feel bad. I think it's pretty awesome and pretty amazing. And I hope that that's what other people will notice too, that they the value of staying in a space like that, or keeping trying to get back to it anytime you fall off, is that you can then have a really great life. You know, you can have a really great life.
I love that. Having a really great life is the goal.
Yeah. Isn't it? Like, that's all that really matters, you know, whether you can calculate and communicate or not. Usually it helps if you can, because that's really fun too. And you can have a blast with all the calculating and communicating. But that's the point. We're not doing it to just keep on, you know, building and building and building things and getting, you know, just making more waste and problems. That's not what it's about. You know, it's actually about enjoying your life. And how do you get to that place? You know,
it's about being the magic.
Be the magic. That's right.
Being the magic. Debbie, thank you. Thank you so much for your time here. If people wanted to find out a little bit about the program that you're offering at Woodson Branch, or learn more about creating, you know, a safe space and a place for kids to grow in nature. I know a lot of times that that's been reserved for homeschool. So the fact that you're doing this in, you know, a different type, you know, an actual structured school environment, I'm might be inspiration to other people, where would they find you?
Okay, Woodson Branch Nature School. If you put that into Google, that's going to be the easiest way to get to it. Google knows us. We're on Facebook and we're on Instagram and all those other magical means of reaching people who don't live right next door to you. And yeah, and then the other piece too, I like to put out there now that we've kind of cracked the code on how to make this work, you know, because it's tough, and there's a lot of people out there with a big hearts that and big energy that want to be able to produce these kinds of things in their communities too. And so I have opened up, you know, besides just coming out and doing a tour to be a student there, you can also come and do a founder tour with me. And you get an hour, you know, of my time, and we'll walk around and talk. You can ask me anything you want, and I'll help you puzzle out maybe how to do it in your area. And like, if you also, you can buy extra hours too. That's not a problem. And if you like what I got to say and it's helpful to you, then we go to the next level and I can come to your spot, like to the space that you're thinking of, and I can help imagine it with you and create plans to get your community doing something like that. So that's an option. It's just easy to find on the website. You know, set yourself up for a tour, and but your people, just anybody in the community, if there's any community members listening, always wondering what's going on up there, set yourself up for a tour. Come and see. We'll walk around and you can check it out and see too if there's something that you want to contribute in, like maybe you have a special gift in your heart that you want to do with kiddos. It's a great place to volunteer, great place to come and get involved. And or if you're a teacher and you've been looking for some other more magical way to do your gift, we are always, you know, looking for the right people to get in here and provide that space and do your magic. So website, that's probably the easiest way to find it. Woodson Branch Nature.
Also on the website, will they find, because, you know, we talked about it's never too late to have a magical childhood. And I know one of the things that has come up for Woodson Branch for a long time is parents saying, well, that's great for the kids, but what about us? We want to have fun too. And you have, the school has actually started this year, and there's some really incredible grown-up programs that are happening. There's a Cobb building, you know, always wanted to build a cob oven that was in the shape of a dragon, but you have got all this great opportunities coming up for grown-up children as well.
Oh, I know. That's been the funny complaint. Like the parents would be like, can't stay? Like when they go to drop their kids off, they're like, what? Why can't I stay? You know? And I'm like, oh man, one day I promise you're going to get classes too, you know? And so it has finally come to fruition. We did our medicine making workshop. It was amazing. Oh my gosh. We left with fire cider, tinctures and salves, you know, it was awesome. The next one's coming. We got a botany walk with Mark Williams. Oh my gosh, that is going to be a treat. Whoa. Ooh. So if you're ever just curious about what you got in your yard, you know, we're going to hop on a walk together with him.
That
one is coming up on April 20th, right after the batter breakfast. You know, like you can come and do your chicken and waffles and support the family outreach committee and then hop right on the walk, you know, walk it off and get some. Yeah. So that's happening on April 20th. And then we also, gosh, the Cobb oven is coming after that. And we've got parent workshops. There's like a 3-part series of parent workshops that are super awesome, really rich in being a mindful, magical parent. Oh man, it's that one. Just check it out. If you're interested at all in like adulting in a fun way. Yeah, we got a whole...
You'll find all that on the website too.
Yes, that's gonna be the best for dates and times and all in the descriptions and who's leading them and stuff like that. So, and here's just the other thing too. If you're like live around here and your kid is going to public school and that works for you, but you just want to have a little extra for your kid, we've got the after school program, we got enrichment clubs, and we have summer camps. So there's all these other ways to get in it and involved in it too. If you don't want to make the full life commitment to it, you know. So,
and you know what's really cool about that is that it's very affordable.
Yes,
a lot of the programs that you present, you know, Woodson Branch isn't a money-making school. It's not there to be a a for-profit, you know, putting, lining someone else's pockets. But everything is kept in mind with that, you know, people are, have to pay their bills. So a lot of the programs are very, very affordable. And I invite anybody who's interested to check it out.
Yes, that was a big part of the whole thing is, oh, let's create magic, but we also need to make it accessible, you know, to anybody. So we have worked very hard to comply with everything we need to make sure that they can get those opportunity scholarships, they can, you know, sliding scale, whatever it is, but we have got it to where people can afford this, they can access it. So.
Debbie Lyle. Thank you so much for being such a vital component to our community. See my little pun?
I love it.
And I'm so grateful for you. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you. That was super fun. I hope we could do it again sometime.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Bye.
Thank you for listening. Mystic Tea is produced by the Ostara Network in conjunction with Of Wand and Earth and the Two Brooms Tea House. Of Wand and Earth is a mystical mercantile nestled in the magical mountains of North Carolina. We invite you to stop on in if you're ever in the Asheville area, or visit us online at www.ofwandandearth.com to learn more. Until then, blessed be.